Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Tony on vacation today and all week. John Stashower filling in today and all week alongside Ron Culver. We're going to talk to Alex Myers later this hour. He's with Golf Digest, so we talked to him the morning after a very entertaining and compelling U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. This was a final round where there were 10 golfers within a shot of the lead on the front nine and still seven within a shot of the lead on the back nine. And then you had guys just fall by the wayside. You know, Rory McIlroy, two bogeys, double bogey. He's out. Bryson DeChambeau goes from sole possession of the lead on the back nine to finishing 26th as he shoots a 44 in the back nine. So we'll get into that, but we'll also talk to him, obviously, about Jon Rahm, who was just steady while everybody else was screwing up. He wasn't, and he makes big birdie putts on 17 and 18. And holds off Louis Oosthuizen, and just a great, you know, emotional scene. I mean, the most emotional post-tournament scene was probably a couple years ago when Tiger won the Masters, and he's hugging his son in the exact same spot where he hugged his own father when he won his first Masters back in 96. But to have Jon Rahm walking off the course holding his three-month-old son on Father's Day, and remember what happened 2 weeks ago. He thought he was going to win the Memorial. He walks off the green, the 18th green in the third round with a six-shot lead. So he's already basically getting ready to cash the check for $1.7 million. And they whisper in his ear, by the way, John, you tested positive for COVID. And so he doesn't even get to play the final round. He gets bupkis. And then 2 weeks later, he goes from losing $1.7 million to winning $2.25 million. And gets his first major, first Spaniard to ever win the U.S. Open. Just the fourth Spaniard, I think, to ever win a fourth with Sergio, Seve Ballesteros, and Jose Maria Olazabal. So we'll talk golf later on this hour. We'll come back, talk some NBA and the importance we're seeing of coaching in these NBA playoffs. Stay with us. Good to have you with us, Sports Map Radio.
This is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
In for Tony D. Off today and all weekend enjoying a nice summer vacation as we are into summer. Good to have you with us on this Monday morning Sports Map Radio. John Stashower along with Ron Culver. So there's no NBA tonight, which is the first time in a while. But game two in the West is tomorrow night in Phoenix. And remember, the Suns were down 2-1 to the Lakers and then won three straight, then had a second round sweep, and then won yesterday. I mean, they've won eight in a row in the postseason. These are the Phoenix Suns, who 2 years ago went 19-63. So that begs the question, Ron. You know, you look at this roster, obviously they added Chris Paul, which was a big help, but they win yesterday without him. Devin Booker is terrific, as you talked about earlier, but he was on that team 2 years ago. They went 19-63. I mean, DeAndre Ayton, they've added, you know, they had the first pick 1 year. That helps. But how about the job that Monty Williams has done? This is a guy who had success in New Orleans and was kind of surprisingly fired back in 2015. And I think more surprising than that, it took him a long time to get another job. Considering, I mean, he was a Popovich assistant. That usually helps lead to getting a head coaching job. Remember, he had a terrible tragedy in his life. Five years ago, his wife dies in a car accident. So suddenly he's a single dad with five kids. We talked a little about Doc Rivers the first hour. And I don't know if you can always, do you blame Doc Rivers for Philadelphia losing when one of his star players, Ben Simmons, you know, all of a sudden can't play? I don't know. Maybe there is coaching involved there that you can't get more out of him. But I think you can win. you not necessarily lose because of bad coaching. I think you can win because of good coaching, and I think we're seeing that in Phoenix because Monty Williams has to get a tremendous amount of credit for what he's done.
Oh, he definitely does because he, for whatever reason, I mean, I don't know if it was just timing was right, but he got Devin Booker to be what we know about who Devin Booker is now. I mean, Devin Booker's been a good player, but I think he's gotten him, getting him to that next level. Then there's got to be something to said about that.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is a natural, you know, maturation process for Devin Booker that
right.
he would start to get a little older and more experienced and become. This is the first time he's ever been in the playoffs, and you know he was unbelievable yesterday. Again, he had 16 points in a row in the third quarter. There, it goes for 40 points and a triple double. Obviously, they needed it without Paul, and we don't know. I guess we have we heard that Chris Paul might be back. I think. As soon as game two, he's going to play in this series, right? I mean, he's in protocol.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not in a hospital somewhere.
Got to produce two negative tests, and that's
yeah.
it.
So, as we talked about how it must have killed him to not be able to play yesterday, get to a conference finals, playing his former team. But I think he'll play in this series. As we talked about, Kawhi Leonard, different story. He got a knee injury. I mean, there was talk that he had, like you said, they're
ACL.
Not. Yeah, and we don't know if he had an ACL or not, but they're being like hockey, with not being forthcoming with these injuries. But I think it bodes well for the Suns. They win the game. Now they might be getting Paul back, and the Clippers might still be without Kawhi. I think I'd be surprised if the Clippers can win this series.
But with like, you know, Kawhi Leonard's injury. Is it gamesmanship not to fully divest what's going
and
on?
And should the league step in and say, hey.
You know, it's like, he could be back, son, so you guys have to game plan for Kawhi Leonard. If the guy's injured, if he's going to be, if there's a chance for him to come back, give us something. Let us know. Hey, game four, we're hopeful he can come back. Game two, you know, he should be back next, a couple days from now. Or, no, this is worse than we thought. He's done for the season.
Well, in hockey, they don't even tell you what the injury is. Is this a lower body or upper body? Okay, take your pick.
You got a 50-50 chance.
By the way, the hockey's been good. I don't know if people are watching or not, but, I mean, you get the semifinals. They don't call it the conference finals anymore, but both series are tied at two. And, yeah, I don't know if you saw the end of the Islanders-Tampa Bay game on Saturday night. It was going on the same time that, you know, Kevin Durant was going nuts in that game seven. But the Islanders, who had a 3-0 lead at one point, it's down to 3-2. And in the final seconds, you know, the Lightning have pulled the goalie. They got an extra skater. They're trying to get the tying goal. And, I mean, the last seconds of the game, the Islander goalie is completely out of position. And the guy on Tampa Bay, I think it was Ryan McDonough, has a chance to tie the game in the final seconds. And the defenseman for the Islanders steps in basically to the exact spot where the goalie normally stands. And he makes the save. He doesn't have all the padding or anything like that. And he, like, takes it in the puck into his chest in the final seconds. And that's how they've held on to win that game.
Yeah, hockey tough is a different breed of tough.
Yeah, they take pucks into their face. They just dive down. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They're the only one league that's still allowed to fight. They'll still fight.
Oh, yeah.
Hockey tough is, I mean, that's a different, I don't even get it. Because first of all, I mean, I know I'd never be good at hockey because I can't follow the puck that fast. Nothing's shooting around there so quickly.
It's always been a sport that's way better live than on TV. I mean, it's always been the case. And then, look, we're seeing the Nassau Coliseum, they're packing the place. And so Vegas won last night in overtime, early goal in overtime. So both series are tied at two, Vegas against. Now in Montreal, it's like a year ago. They're still won't let fans in. There's like nothing going on. They're finally playing games there, but no fans. Sorry. So there's no atmosphere there.
Well,
but
at least
everywhere else
Vegas in.
Vegas, absolutely. Now that series going back to Vegas. That's tied at two. Game five tonight, Islanders, Tampa Bay. But let's get back to the NBA. We talked about coaching. Monty Williams. How about Nate McMillan? Again, this is a guy who's been around the league. He was in Portland. He was in Indiana. Gets fired just a year ago at Indiana. Goes to Atlanta as an assistant. And they fire their coach, Lloyd Pierce, because they're 14-20. I mean, if you, as they say, you are what your record says you are. I think there was a Bill Parcells line. Well, he takes over and they go 27-11. Now they're in the East Finals. He's doing something right. So, again, I think coaching it can help you win. I don't know if it can prevent you from losing. Does that make sense at all? I don't know.
Yes.
If you're a bad team, you can be John Wooden. You're still not going to win. But if you got bad players, we're seeing it. We're seeing it in the NBA. And Atlanta wins a game 7 last night in Philadelphia when Trae Young, he did hit a few shots in the fourth quarter, but before then he was 2-for-20. The guy who's been carrying Atlanta, carrying them to the first round win over the Knicks, carrying them to the 26, come back from a 26-point deficit in Philadelphia, and he's 2-for-20, and they're still winning the game. Kevin Huerter steps up and scores 27 points. And Atlanta wins game 7 on the road. So we had 2 road victories. It used to be like game 7s, you never won on the road. We had 2 of them this weekend. Milwaukee, overtime in Brooklyn. Atlanta, last night in Philadelphia. And so we have, in the East, the 3 seed versus the 5 seed. And in the West, we have the 2 seed versus the 4 seed. And we talked last hour about how there's no history of these teams ever doing this. No, you know, winning championships or even getting to the NBA Finals. So, I mean, look, I thought the NBA was great this weekend. I mean, you can't ask for that. The game last night was great. Great drama. Guys hitting shots. Big, you know, Kevin Durant, what he's did, what Paul George did in a losing effort. He was terrific. I mean, I think the NBA's been putting on a great show this weekend.
It has been. I mean, it's a good exhibition of young talent that we're finally getting to see, you know, instead of seeing the old stalwarts that have been there for year after year after year. Like I said earlier, I mean, I think the NBA would wish that one of the teams had some familiar faces, but I think the ratings may not show it, but it actually does the NBA some good service.
I agree.
To have.
What's your prediction? Who's going to win the NBA championship of these 4 left?
Right now, I'm kind of feeling Hawks, Suns, and I think the Suns do it.
I mean, Hawks, Suns, it's just so weird. Hawks, Suns, finals?
Hey, listen, that's not sexy at all.
Oh,
and we
God.
Know it's not sexy. But I don't know. I mean, just the way the Hawks are playing, they won't go away. I don't think Milwaukee matches that well against the Hawks. Because, I mean, really, if you take Giannis out and Middleton and I can't remember the other guy's name, one of the Holiday brothers.
Holiday was terrible.
Yeah, but
Game 7, they hit some shots down at the end, but he had a terrible game.
But if they
game.
Continue to play that way, you know, the Hawks will capitalize, and you know, we'll have this no-name team led by Trae Young get into the finals. I just think the Suns are better than the Clippers. And this could be Laker bias coming from me. I just don't trust the Clippers. I never will. And what will probably happen is Phoenix will go up 2-0, and then the Clippers will start winning again. And we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Suns, especially without Kawhi. And I was impressed with the Suns. We're already off to a 1-0 lead. I don't know about this East series. I'm really impressed with Atlanta. I was not shocked that they beat Philadelphia. Maybe I was surprised they won a Game 7 on the road, having lost a Game 6 at home. When they had a chance to wrap up the series, I thought maybe that was their chance, and they had blown their chance. But if you had asked me at the start of the series, I would have said, yeah, Atlanta's got a really good chance to win this series. I don't know if they can do it again. I don't know. I think I'm going to go Bucks with home court. You know, Giannis has got a weird thing going on. We talked about Ben Simmons. He can't make a free throw. Now, Giannis, he made some free throws. It takes him like 20 seconds before he takes the free throw. But he's got issues going. I mean, should an MVP of the league not be able to make a free throw? We see, like, you know, in history, big guys who can't make, you know, Shaq struggle.
Shaq famously, yeah.
But, I mean, why can't Giannis make a free throw? That's boggled. I guess it's something going on in his head, but you're the 2-time MVP. I mean, I'm not saying you got to be, you know, Steph Curry, but you should be able to make 70% of your free throws.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like you said, we used to say the same thing about Shaq.
But he's a big guy. Giannis can shoot.
He was never a good long-distance shooter. Shaq just bullied his way to the rim. I'm shocked about that, too.
All right, we got to take a break, Ron. When we come back, we've talked a lot of hoops. I'll talk about this Cole Beasley situation. That's next. I'm John Stashower. Good to have you with us. Sports Map Radio.
This is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
And for the vacationing Tony D, Sports Map Radio, we're going to talk to Alex Myers from Golf Digest in a little bit. Recap the U.S. Open and Jon Rahm's victory yesterday at Torrey Pines. Ron, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that, you know, at somewhere along the line we would have an athlete in some sport be Cole Beasley. So Cole Beasley's the guy we have. Buffalo Bills wide receiver. I had him on my fantasy team last year.
I did too.
Yeah, you know, nice player. We all know he was in Dallas. He's the guy, the slot receiver, and you know, he's a talented guy. He's made himself a nice career. Who knew? But he doesn't want to get vaccinated, and he is pledging to. Here was some of his quotes. Pledging to live my one life like I want to, regardless. I will be outside doing what I do. I'll be out in public. If you're scared of me, then steer clear or get vaccinated. I may die of COVID, but I'd rather die actually living. I'm not going to take meds for a leg that isn't broken. I'd rather take my chances with COVID and build up my immunity that way. I'll play for free this year. To live, first of all, that's a ridiculous statement because you know you won't play for free. But anyway, I'll play for free this year to live life how I've lived it from day one. If I'm forced into retirement, so be it. So I guess we shouldn't be shocked. I mean, that of all the athletes, I can't. Is there anyone else said these things? I haven't heard anyone, any other sport. But we got one. We got Cole Beasley. And you know what? I wouldn't mind if the Buffalo Bills said to him, now look, they want him to play. He's a productive player for them. He's Cole Beasley. He's not like, this isn't Josh Allen. Cole Beasley, if the Buffalo Bills, you know, there's no guaranteed contracts in the NFL, they could just say, fine, see ya.
Right.
You want to get vaccinated? Have fun. I don't know what he makes, a couple million, $3 million a year. Don't get vaccinated? Yeah, we don't want you.
Just buy it out.
We don't want you. You think that would ever happen?
No, because here's the issue with we've seen in the NFL. We see it all the way. If you can play, you're going to play.
But again, he's not the franchise player. I mean, they can get it. There's no other Cole Beasleys out there.
Oh, I'm certain there are. And I mean, yeah, a lot of that probably was more Josh Allen than anything. But again, the one thing you don't want to do is you have Cole Beasley go somewhere else and have him have great success, and you weren't able to find that replacement.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, look, I don't understand the logic. Now,
but I'm with you.
It's not like he's the only guy. Look, I live in a state where there's, I think, 80% have been vaccinated, but there's a lot of states where it's under 50. So, I mean, it's not like he's the only guy out there. I mean, there's a large swath of this country doing the same thing. I don't get it after everything we've been through for, you know, whatever, a year and a half to get this vaccine that works and to get rid of this damn pandemic and then not take advantage of that. I don't personally understand the logic. So what do the Bills do? I don't know. I mean, Josh Allen, I think, hasn't gotten vaccinated. And Sean McDermott admitted he's concerned that so many of his players aren't getting it. Aren't there some companies that have made it in an edict? You want to work here, you got to get vaccinated? You can do that, can't you?
Well, I don't know. You can't. I don't think you can force people to get the vaccine.
And then you get a lawsuit.
What you can do and what the NFL is trying to do is say, hey, you know, this is where the vaccinated people go, and this is where the non-vaccinated people go. We have to keep you isolated just in case. Vaccinated people, you guys can all meet in a meeting room, be part of team meetings, you know, quarterbacks, you guys can all get together as long as you're vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, then I'm sorry, you got to be isolated from everyone else. You're going to be on the Zoom call.
Yeah, I mean, he's ripped the union. He said, this is crazy. Did we vote on this? These are all tweets from him. I stay in the hotel. Yeah. We still have meetings. We will all be together. Vaccinated players can go out the hotel and bring COVID back into where I am. So what does it matter if I stay in the hotel now? 100% immune with vaccination? No, the Players Association is a joke. It's not for the players. everyone gives me the 98% of people who are vaccinated don't get COVID again. The odds of me getting in the NFL and playing for 10 years are lower than that. And I'm here. What does that? What does one have to do with the other?
I don't know. I don't see the adversity to getting the vaccine. I got it right away.
Oh, my God. So, the simplest thing in the world.
Yeah. And I haven't grown a third tail, and I'm not worried about the government tracking me because I already know they're tracking me because of my phone.
Josh Allen, back in March, during a podcast appearance, said he was still undecided about whether he would get the vaccine, saying he would do what the statistics told him in the right move. I think Sam Darnold said more recently.
Yeah, Sam Darnold had mentioned something to the effect of he needed to do a little more research. And that's just a cop out. I mean, you could have said that.
What more research do you need? What more research do you need? I don't get it. And now, when you talk about quarterbacks, that's a different ballgame. You know, Josh Allen, the Buffalo's not releasing Josh Allen. You know, so Sam Darnold, the same way. He's going to be the starting quarterback, apparently, in Carolina. So Cole Beasley, to me, you know, again, like he said to himself, he's an overachiever. It's a nice story what he's made out of his career. But if I were the Bills, I might just say, fine. Is that the way you feel? I mean, he said it. I'd rather retire. Fine. Retire. Walk away. Let's see if you actually do it.
No, that's, again, I just don't see the NFL. I mean, maybe 20, 30 years ago, that's the NFL. But nowadays, they don't have that gumption anymore. I mean, look at the Packers situation with Aaron Rodgers. You know, they're going back and forth. I mean, I understand it's Aaron Rodgers, but they will end up bending over backwards just to make sure that it happens, that he gets that he stays on the team. I would like to think that they would hold his feet to the fire, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, that's a whole other. I mean, I think we talked about that last time I was on.
I know.
I think this dragged on. I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
I keep hearing different things.
I keep hearing there's no way the Packers would ever trade him, and then I've heard other people say, you know, they should get ready for Jordan Love.
Yeah, you know? I mean, several weeks ago when you and I talked about it, we thought it would be wrapped up by now, but it's not. It's still going. So
that's the one thing we're still waiting on in the NFL.
But I mean, I know running backs, wide receivers, you know, they're kind of looked at now as like a dime a dozen. You can just get. I mean, we saw the Falcons just get rid of their best wide receiver ever. They're probably their best player ever.
Yeah, and, but he's slipping.
I mean, he is slipping. Yeah, you know, more injury prone, getting older. But he'd still produce on the field, and you know that was an easy decision for them. So Cole Beasley, I'm sorry, man. You know, if the Bills really want to hold their feet to the fire and you know make it a double standard where they're cowering to Josh Allen but not to Cole Beasley, what'd you expect?
All right, changing gears here. Sports Map Radio, John Stashow, Ron Culver. Hey, you ever see the movie The Odd Couple?
Yes.
The movie, not the TV show.
The movie with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon,
like the 1960s.
Yeah.
So as we all know, Oscar Madison is a sports writer, right? And so there's a scene in the movie where he's at a Mets game at Shea Stadium, and he's like covering it, and he's depressed because the other team's got the bases. He's talking to a guy. I forget who said it. All right, I think Oscar said it. He said, "What's the matter? It looks bad for the Mets." And Oscar said, "What do you mean? What's the matter? You never seen a triple play?" And then he gets a phone call from Felix, so he has to turn away from the game. And Felix tells him not to eat a hot dog at the game because he's making Franks and beans for dinner. And as he's talking to Felix, he misses seeing the triple play that he had predicted would happen. So I thought of that as I'm watching the Yankee game yesterday, because the A's have two on. It's a 2-1 game. And my son says to me, well, maybe the Yankees will turn a triple play. Because remember, they've already had two this season. And the next pitch, triple play. Three triple plays in 1 month pulled off by the Yankees. Golf talk next. Stay with us. Sports Map Radio.
This is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
Alex Myers is with Golf Digest. Check him out on Twitter at AlexMyers3. He joins us the morning after John Rahm's victory in the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. Alex, there's a lot to unfold after what we saw yesterday. But we'll get to the guys who didn't win because there's a lot of stories there. But let's start with the guy who did win. I know John Rahm, you know, was a very successful golfer at Arizona State. He's been very good as a pro. I guess this was expected of him. I mean, is this a guy that you guys like you had been hearing about way back, even when he was at Arizona State?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he was one of those guys who, when he was in college, even you hear this guy's PGA Tour ready, and you know, kind of that kind of came out last year when he ascended to world number one. Phil Mickelson revealed he'd actually made a bet with a fellow PGA Tour player, Colt Knost, who's now a commentator, that John Rahm would get into the top 10 of the world ranking within 1 year of turning pro. And that is basically unheard of. And John Rahm did that. And Phil Mickelson won that bet, of course. That's why he liked to share that story. But that's just how much talent he had. And, of course, Phil Mickelson's brother, Tim Mickelson, was his coach at Arizona State. So that's why Phil was so familiar with him. He got to play a lot of rounds with him, you know, in Arizona. And he was amazingly, you know, impressed with this young man. So certainly it's almost surprising it took this long for him to win a major, considering how quickly he ascended the ranks and got to world number one. Now he's back at world number one.
Yeah, Phil made a bet. Stunning that would happen. Yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, yeah, and Rahm talked about Phil's win at the PGA kind of inspiring him. But, you know, I said earlier this morning, you know, how, you know, look, it's amazing these golfers. It's amazing to see DeChambeau, you know, hit a ball 390 yards or whatever. But also the way these guys can read greens. So I'm watching Rahm in the sand trap on the 72nd hole, and his feet are lined up like, wait a minute, where is he trying to hit this ball? He seemed to be aiming to the hole, and it worked. He got it out in a place where he was in a position to make the putt, and he made the putt. What'd you make of the way he played that 18th green?
You know, it was amazing because he hits the perfect drive there, and you're thinking, okay, this is a lock. He's going to make a birdie here. And then I think he just got a tad too aggressive with that second shot, and he missed it in a spot that you really can't miss it in that bunker. He was on the downslope. And I don't think what people can realize there is if he aims at the hole there and he hits it just a tad thin, that green, the ball could roll right off that green and into the water, and you could make a disaster. And, you know, he could go down as an all-time choke job. So I give him a lot of, you know, credit there for aiming well, like you said, well right at the hole, not even taking it on, and giving himself at least a chance. Now, that still wasn't an easy putt, and considering he had just made an even tougher one the hole before, the fact that he made those two consecutive putts like that, I mean, the odds would have been 1 in 100 probably. But, you know, he was very cool under pressure. He didn't get too excited there. He took his medicine, and he ended up making the putt, and it's now the stuff of legend. So just a well done by John Rahm on that last hole.
So, you know, while Rahm is a great story, and it was incredible to see him holding a three-month-old infant as he walks off, and we all know what happened 2 weeks ago, you know, at the memorial.
Sure.
I think Alex, and the big story also is the guys who were in contention and didn't win. Let's start with Rory McIlroy, who is still, we know, an incredibly talented golfer. But, Alex, it's been 7 years. You know, he wins four majors,
yeah,
and now he goes 7 years without winning one, you know, two bogeys and a double bogey on the back nine. What's going on with Rory in these majors?
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about the odds of Rahm making those last two putts. I think the odds are even longer if you went back 7 years and said Rory McIlroy wouldn't have another major by now. I mean, the guy won four majors by the time he was, you know, 25 years old. He was clearly destined to be one of the all-time greats, and it's just been a bunch of things. I mean, he's still won plenty of events in that time. He's won PGA Tour Player of the Year a couple times, a couple FedEx Cup titles. He's finished so high in the majors over and over again. He just can't close the deal anymore. And, you know, he finally made a switch, a coaching change within the past year, and he's made some pretty significant changes. So it was actually a surprise to almost see him back in this position, and a pleasant surprise because we thought, well, it might take him a while to kind of get back into this. So on one hand, it's got to be a confidence builder for him to get back in the mix so soon after making some of these changes. But on the other, you're right. I mean, just another missed opportunity for him as, you know, we're kind of eating up a lot of his prime here with those 7 years. And to not win a major, a guy of his caliber, it's pretty stunning.
All right, let's talk about DeChambeau. I imagine this has happened in history, although I don't know about an Open. I mean, the guy he had sole possession of the lead, Alex, on the back nine, and he finished 26th. How does that does not happen very often.
It's amazing. And you know, Rahm's spectacular finish will kind of cover up a lot of that. But had, you know, a lesser name won, probably, I think the focus would be more on DeChambeau's collapse, because that is what it was. I mean, he almost makes a hole in one on the eighth hole. He grabs the lead. Like you said, he still had it going to the back nine. And just, I mean, a 44 on the back nine, just for a guy who had sole possession of the lead, who hadn't made a bogey in over 30 holes in the U.S. Open. And also keep in mind, of course, he's the defending champ. So we know he likes this style of golf, this style of course. He can play. He dominated at Wingfoot last year, won by 6 shots. So to have the switch flipped that quickly and that violently, and you know, you're seeing him hitting blading shots over the green and you know, missing putts and everything else and hitting it off the map and into hazards, it was a stunning collapse. I mean, this wasn't some guy who has never been in that position before. I mean, this is a guy who expected to be in this position, took that position, and then completely gave it away. So, you know, afterwards, he kind of just blamed it on a string of bad breaks, which is bizarre. I mean, of course, that's ridiculous. It's some terrible shots under pressure, and maybe he's just trying to, you know, in his own head at least, make himself feel better. But, yeah, to fall from first to outside the top 25, one of the more crazy collapses I could recall.
Yeah, I'd love to blame every one of my bad shots on just a bad break. I mean,
yeah,
I hit the ball. I'm the one who hit it. I can't blame anyone else but myself. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, with us here at SportsMap Radio. So I guess, you know, advantage Brooks Koepka, because, I mean, he was a little up and down yesterday, but he certainly finished much less embarrassingly than Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, what'd you make of, I mean, I guess it's still an ongoing thing, and we haven't heard the last of Koepka versus DeChambeau, but what do you make of all that?
Yeah, we definitely haven't. I'm sure Brooks was chuckling to himself somewhere last night when he saw that Bryson ended up finishing below him on the board when it looked like he was not only going to beat him but beat everybody and cut into that major lead he has. But no, these are clearly two guys who don't really like each other much. And you know, I actually thought the whole Brooks giving beer away to the fans who heckled Bryson, I thought that was a little much. I think that maybe crossed the line. But other than that, I don't mind a little rivalry here and there. It seems like most of these guys are too chummy, if anything. And, you know, to have a little rivalry, to have a story that transcends golf and gets out there. I mean, you know, the day after Phil Mickelson wins the PGA, and that should be the story of the year, you get that eye roll on that leaked video, and that just bumps Phil right off the front page of all the websites. So people jumped on this rivalry. It's too bad that they weren't able to play together throughout the tournament. I know some people were hoping for that. But no, it's definitely something to look forward to as the years go on, because they're obviously both great players and they're both, you know, very young still.
You know, we'll see what the ratings were. And I know they were going, you know, a little bit against the NBA at some points. But in a tournament, obviously without Tiger, you know, Phil was not a factor. I mean, I just thought it had so much, was so compelling, so many storylines where you had big names, you know, not so big names. You had a crowded leaderboard, then it dwindled down. I mean, I would assume that there were a lot of eyeballs yesterday. What do you think?
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, you know, like you said, no Tiger, no Phil. You know, Jordan Spieth was out of it. I think those are kind of the three biggest draws still. But certainly Rory, certainly Bryson, certainly Brooks. You know, at one point yesterday, there were 10 or 15 guys who could have won. And almost all the names were just these brand names that, that every, even the casual golf fan knows. I mean, so it was a spectacular leaderboard. And then, yeah, in about a 30-minute period, you had, you know, 7 to 8 guys just completely come undone, which you kind of, you kind of like to see at the U.S. Open. I mean, but it was amazing how many guys played themselves into contention, how many big stars, too, and then how many just completely played themselves out of contention in a short time. But, I would imagine that the ratings will be pretty good because you had a stacked leaderboard and everything else. But, of course, it's not going to measure up to the Tiger, anything that Tiger ever did. But, no, it was a great tournament. You know, Torrey Pines took a lot of heat for not being this great course, but let's face it, it's produced the 2008 U.S. Open, which Tiger won on a broken leg, and now it's produced this U.S. Open won by Jon Rahm against a, you know, stacked leaderboard. So we've had two great tournaments when that course is hosted.
Yeah, I thought for sure we're going to head towards a playoff, like you said, where you had 10 right. golfers with a shot of the lead, and then it right. changed. So before we let you go, I was just to circle back to Rahm, because we talk about, you know, Koepka and DeChambeau not getting along. Rahm seems like a likable figure. And were guys, yeah. how, you know, what was the reaction to what happened to him 2 weeks ago? You know, to basically lose what was almost certainly going to be a $1.7 million payday.
Right.
I mean, did he get a lot of support from the other golfers after that?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he's a very well-liked player on tour. And, you know, the one knock on him, and I don't even think it's a knock, is that he loses his temper from time to time. And you know, we all do on the golf course, right?
Right.
And, you know, he was even asked about, he, for whatever reason, even though almost everybody out there that happens, he gets asked about it constantly. And even this week he was asked about it. And he said, am I ever going to dodge this question? I mean, are people ever going to stop asking this question? And probably they're not, because, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, first impressions make a lot. I guess he did lose his cool when he was a little younger, but no, I mean, he's a great guy. He's a class golfer, a class act. You know, he took a lot of heat these last few years because the expectations on these young guys are so much higher now. And when you have other guys around him, you know, a Bryson or a Colin Morikawa or, you know, these other younger guys even winning majors before him, that puts even more heat on him. And then you get his mentor, Phil Mickelson, winning a major at 50, and he's probably thinking, geez, when am I going to get one? So, you know, a surprisingly amount of pressure on a guy who's only 26, but for him to get the monkey off his back was great to see. Again, he's world number one for a reason. We got plenty more years to watch him try to win these big events, and this is just the beginning, I think.
Yeah, and the best thing to do when you lose out on a $1.7 million payday is to 2 weeks later get a $2.25 million payday. that kind of eases the blow a little bit. So
yeah. It does, exactly.
Alex, appreciate the time. Take care.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
Take Alex care. Myers from Golf Digest, the day after the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, where Jon Rahm emerges out of a crowded pack, you know, mostly because of the guys who you know, just didn't play well down the stretch, and most notably Bryson DeChambeau, who, as Alex pointed out, he was within an inch. You know, we talked about Kevin Durant in the three-point shot at the end of regulation in Brooklyn, where that could have been almost a three-pointer that would have won the series. I mean, DeChambeau was an inch from getting a hole-in-one, but he still gets a birdie. He's got the sole possession of the lead, and then a 44 on the back nine after a 33 on the front, and he goes from sole possession of the lead to finishing tied for 26th. I've never seen that happen. We will wrap things up on a Monday morning. Stay with us. I'm John Stashower, Sports Map Radio.
This is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
All right, wrap it up on a Monday morning. John Stashower in for Tony D this morning and all week as he enjoys a nice vacation and kicking things off on the first day of summer. So no NBA tonight. That hasn't happened probably in a while. Just had a couple of game sevens in the East. The West Series, which is now 1-0 Phoenix, has game two tomorrow night in Phoenix. Sounds like Chris Paul might be able to return, and Kawhi Leonard presumably will not. And that bodes well for the Suns, who have now won 8 in a row in this postseason. Remember, they were down 2-1 to the Lakers, and everyone was saying, okay, same old Lakers, they're going to win this series. Suns won the next three. Then came the sweep, and now up 1-0 on the Clippers, who don't have their star player. So I like the chances for the Phoenix Suns playing in the NBA Finals for the first time since 1993. They have never won the championship. And the East Series starts Wednesday in Milwaukee, because they're the 3 seed. Atlanta's the 5 seed. It hasn't hurt the Hawks. They've won 5 road games. They've been in these playoffs. 2 in New York, 3 in Philadelphia. They just won a game 7 last night when their star player Trae Young shot 5 for 23, and he made his last 3. He had been 2 for 20, and they still won the game. And so we'll see if the Hawks can keep this thing going as they now take on the Bucks in a very unlikely Eastern Conference final starting Wednesday night in Milwaukee. There is hockey tonight. Islanders and Lightning. When that game 4 ended, it was a defenseman basically standing where the goalie usually stands and making a game-saving save and getting the Islanders the game 4 victory. So that series is tied at 2. Montreal and Vegas are tied at 2 after Vegas won last night in overtime. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern, with lots to talk about. Hope you can join us then.